Welcome back to episode 305 of Powers and Principalities. Joe, how are you doing?
Just fine, Tim. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. Well, Joe, a lot to discuss. Let's talk about, I guess you call it entertainment movies. There is a movie that's out, came out, I think, around July 4th weekend, and it apparently did very well at the box office. It's The Sound of Freedom. It's a movie starring Jim Caviezel. He's, of course, famous for playing Jesus Christ in Passion of the Christ many years ago. A pretty well-known actor, television star. He's been in a few TV series and many movies. And it's apparently this movie is a dramatized version of a DHS, a Department of Homeland Security agent. I think his name is Tim Ballard. So Jim Caviezel plays Tim Ballard. The Sound of Freedom. Came out. Just around July 4th, and it's about this DHS agent breaking up a child trafficking ring in South America. Apparently, it's based on a true story, for whatever that's worth. What's interesting, again, a lot of people saying this is, you know, breaking ground. It's revealing an aspect or an ugly truth about what's going on in the world. Now, a lot of people are familiar with human trafficking. It's all around the world. It's particularly in places that are troubled, whether it's war zones or poverty-stricken areas, for obvious reasons. This movie was released in multiple theaters, and I think it beat out the latest Indiana Jones movie, which...
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what it means, what ticket receipts mean now these days, because the way movie industry is situated with movies are, you know, don't spend a lot of time in theaters anymore with Netflix and streaming and these things. So what to make of that? But what was interesting was the reaction to it, of course. This is a movie about human trafficking, or particularly child sex trafficking. And it was such outlets like The Guardian, the website Jezebel, accused it of being conspiracy, QAnon type conspiracy theory. Although I don't think anyone says that child trafficking isn't occurring. So I don't know where they get off of the QAnon stuff. But what's interesting was that, like Rolling Stone criticized it. And I haven't seen the movie, of course, but I saw the breakdown of it. And from what I understand, it's a pretty entertaining, pretty well done movie. Now it comes out of a Christian movie production. I think it's called Angel Studios out of Utah. Mm-hmm. And one thing that distinguishes these movies is the high quality of production. Now they seem to have gotten, for the longest time, you can see Christian movies that just didn't have the production quality, whether it's script writers or acting. And in this one, the production is pretty high, at least on par with something Hollywood produces. So that's what's notable here. But what was interesting was the criticism it received. Accusing them of appealing to QAnon types, right wingers, just because it takes on this issue of child sex trafficking, which again, no one says isn't occurring. What's your take on that?
I was quite amazed, particularly at Rolling Stone's critique.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just read it. I think it's worthwhile for people to be aware of it. It's claimed that the movie is a stomach-turning experience, fetishizing the torture of child victims and lingering over lush preludes to their sexual abuse. At times, I had the uncomfortable sense that I might be arrested myself just for sitting through it. To know thousands of adults will absorb this vigilante fever dream and come away thinking themselves better informed on the hidden civilization crisis. Well, it's profoundly depressing. Worse still, they want to spread the word. That's really a shocking piece of propaganda, in that he basically accuses the film of being child pornography. I mean, this is what he is asserting. And somehow that the child pornography the acceptance of it is what will be spread by people who have sat through the film. It's really kind of almost like, double bind, or just like a statement of a crazy person. And you really have to think of, well, what would be in back of such a review? It's just so illogical, so irrational. The idea that that, you know, that people would be spreading the word about child pornography and the fetishizing of it, rather than talking about the content of the film, which is an expose of this, is just, you know, it's nonsensical. But, you know, you can easily see that this is an agenda. They're trying to destroy it, and you just have to ask yourself why. Rolling Stone was really criticized sharply for this review. And they asked the question of, well, why would Rolling Stone basically not be promoting a film that was exposing child trafficking, sex trafficking? And you know what? I would suggest him as a candidate, you know, idea. It's because they want to defend it because they're part of the system that engages in it. I mean, I cannot prove that with, you know, facts and details, but they are part. Rolling Stone is obviously, you know, well tucked into the Hollywood government media structure. And so that's really what I think, you know, you're looking at when you read Rolling Stone's review.
Yeah, from what I understand, I think they gave a very good review for The Cuties, which is a film, a Netflix film that sexualized preteen girls. I think it was took place in France or something. It involved a Muslim immigrant, of all people, who wanted to, I guess, take, was it a beauty contest or something? I didn't see it, of course. But I think they called it a coming-of-age film.
Like 8 years old.
Yeah, so coming of age for a pedophile. And of course, Rolling Stone was the magazine a few years ago that claimed that trying to get people to stop watching pornography and stop masturbating was anti-Semitic. So I wonder if they're going to come out and call this film anti-Semitic for being...
no doubt. I mean, the thing is, Rolling Stone is defending pornography, clearly. I mean, this, you know, you just cited one example, but there are hundreds. Mm-hmm. And it always has, and it is part of how Christian European culture has been destroyed, right? I mean, it's just very straightforward. Pornography is their, you know, bulwark. It's what they're able to use as the battering ram, and so of course it's being defended. And here, where one of the effects of pornography, which is you know, child sexual abuse, is being presented as a horrible thing. They try to mind control and don't let people, you know, come away thinking that they have to actually do something about this.
Well, would they ever go after a movie like Schindler's List and call it, you know, exploiting human suffering or fetishizing suffering? Do they ever accuse the Jews of fetishizing suffering with their Holocaust porn films, with their, you know, their guilt porn films that they produce?
That would be a legitimate question. You know, also, how can Rolling Stone even talk about how damaging, you know, sexual content is? I mean, think about what they're saying is that they're fetishizing and lingering over lush preludes to sexual abuse. Well, wait a second. Isn't that very similar to what occurs with pornography in a general sense?
Right? Are they suggesting that the viewer watching this might be titillated or aroused by the suggestion?
Yes, this is exactly right. Now,
is this projection, perhaps?
Well, you have to ask yourself, don't you?
Yes.
But you see how irrational it is. It's so irrational, but that it can't be real. This is not real. This is just propaganda. People who are kind of familiar with how propaganda operates within the media will just, you know, look at Rolling Stone's reaction and just, you know, turn the page. But it's useful to point it out because it's kind of what I would call the diminishing returns moment, mm-hmm. where the effects of pornography are so clear cut and so destructive at this point that something which is basically is attacking the effects of pornography, which is what The Sound of Freedom is in a sense doing, they can't permit to be, you know, to go into our culture unchecked. But the only thing they can do is to create these contradictory ideas. You know what I, you see what I'm saying? Is that they're just, they don't have an even clear way to criticize it or to get to the point where that they're trying to do in terms of mind control, because there's just nowhere to go. It's, they're at the end of the rope and they're exposed. And to, you know, to have him, if someone came up and said, well, you can, could you explain to me, when you talk about, you know, your concern over the lush preludes of sexual abuse, where have you been, Rolling Stone, in the last 50 years in terms of that process with really very young looking women who are engaged in pornography?
Yes, yes.
Where have you been? I mean, how come now suddenly you pop up and this is all wrong and we have to stop these people? And this is a vigilante fever dream.
I've listened to a lot of critiques of his movies, and I saw sort of a breakdown of it last night. I was watching it, and kind of this movie is sort of a limited hangout misdirection, because one thing is it praises the Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
And so then it's supposed to get, you know, I guess the normie types, right winger types, to start supporting these alphabet soup agencies, and these intel agencies, these security agencies are they're on post, they're protecting us, and they're necessary. It's interesting that the story involves a DHS official going to a foreign country. Now, I want to understand, I thought they're supposed to be concerned with Homeland Security. So this is sort of legitimizing the idea of America going abroad as looking for monsters to destroy. And of course, American intervention abroad is, of course, creates a lot of instability, war zones, which actually creates theaters of human trafficking and suffering. You know, a good example is the Balkans. It was an area where America started a war in the 90s. That was an area of rich human trafficking, or North Africa, or the Libya, or the Middle East, you know, or Ukraine today. And so this idea that America must go abroad to stop this one, I would say that interventionist, militaristic American foreign policy, not serving the interests of the American people, the immediate interests of the American people, nor serving any greater good, but serving the narrow interest of the, you know, cosmopolitan global elite who've taken control of our government, is the main cause for this. At least it creates the opportunity and the marketplace for it. Because obviously, when an area is disrupted by war and impoverishment, people are easily exploited, which is what this movie details. I think this takes place, I don't know if it's Guatemala or Venezuela, but it's one of these, you know, poor Latin American countries that are, where there's a lot of, surplus labor that can be easily exploited, whether exported abroad or whatever. We see how that's instrumentalized by the globalist. And another thing, and this all, again, another appeal to the white man's burden to go on and solve all the world's problems. Yes. Another thing is, it doesn't really target anything. Good example is there's no mention of Jeffrey Epstein and the use of child sex trafficking and blackmail. Of course, not, you could just say, well, just about this one story, the story of Tim Ballard. This is based on a real case. You can watch a documentary on the real case with Tim Ballard. But it's not a whistleblowing, you know, movie. It's sort of just, it sings the praises of the US government. So you have to be somewhat skeptical about that. And again, I think you alluded to it, is it doesn't really address, as we can obviously bemoan or condemn child sex trafficking or human trafficking in general, white slave trade, the bigger issue is the sexualization of children that's occurring every day in the United States by our own government, promoting, you know, the whole transgender nonsense.
By
Rolling Stone and the US government and the Department of Education, the court system, dozens of children's hospitals. And we've talked about the wealthy Jewish families that are promoting transgenderism, the funding that goes to Planned Parenthood, and of course, going way back in the late 60s, introduction of graphic sexual material in the schools that was intended to sexualize children, not to educate them, but to sexualize them, to achieve the objective of the authoritarian personality, if you will. So again, the broader sexualization of our society, the moral subversion, sexual corruption in our society, and which arguably has done much broader, wider damage to our country and, you know, to civilization itself. And again, it's one of these things where, you know, you can point this out. a problem in some country in South America. Well, when, well, really, we, if you really want to go and arrest child sex traffickers or predators, you could arrest a whole bunch of them in Washington, D.C. You have to go to Caracas, Venezuela, you know, or Lima, right. Peru. You can Washington, D.C. for that matter. Yeah,
well, exactly right. I mean, the film is in Honduras and in Colombia.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, Colombia, yeah.
That the captured child makes, at least what I read. And my thought here is that, you know, the film is really a kind of a control opposition operation. And what it does is it gives the impression that we need to energize Homeland Security, you know, and the American government, because these other aspects of human culture are evil and venal, and only something, you know, that has the power of Homeland Security can actually step in.
And we have to bring more people in to save them, right?
Right, but my point is just, this is laughable, because if they really wanted to an expose of child sex trafficking, they would have to expose Homeland Security. Because believe me, if Homeland Security was serious about stopping child sex trafficking, it wouldn't be existing. It'd be the simplest thing in the world to stop. I mean, you know, this would be something that could easily be prevented, but it isn't. And when you look at all these connections, for example, between Jeffrey Epstein and individuals involved with the management of Homeland Security, you can see that, you know, people, as we look at the problem of child sex trafficking, you really have to, in the same way, hopefully, that people will look at the problem with like the COVID mandates and the lockdowns, looked at the government as being, you know, the purveyor of evil, right? And deliberate. Mm-hmm. You have to look at Homeland Security and why it can never somehow get, you know, child sex trafficking under control in the same way. You have to bring skepticism. You have to think, well, the oligarchs do have a certain amount of control over Homeland Security, don't they? Doesn't, you know, the Council of Foreign Relations and World Economic Forum and, you know, these kind of groups have some control over this organization? Well, yes, they do. Certainly, you and I don't have any control over it. And when you look at the connections that those individuals have, I mean, look at Jimmy Savile and all of the people who are, you know, back and forth, the Council of Foreign Relations, the British Royal Family, the Hollywood big shots. The idea of like turning to Homeland Security to try to fix this problem is really ridiculous. We have to assume that it is part of the process, because it is something, you know, the child sex trafficking is an oligarch operation. Okay, that's the general truth of the thing. Obviously, there are other exceptions, but, you know, just if you look at the Jimmy Savile case, you can see how clearly the oligarchs are involved in this process. And so to fix the problem, we have to fix the fact that our political system is controlled by, well, a secret society that is evil. So you don't go running to Homeland Security to try to, you know, help the problem. It'd be like running to your local doctor for information about the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Is it safe, doc? You know, I mean, it just, the Homeland Security is part of the problem. It's not something that's ever going to fix it. So that's the thing about the movie. On the other hand, it's like a lot of the limited hangout stuff you get, it is at least useful in the sense it raises awareness. So, you know, I don't hate the movie. I just think people need to know that it's taking them into a cul-de-sac that you're not going to be able to do anything from.
Yeah, and don't cheer more U.S. intervention abroad to solve the world's problems.
Right.
You know, yes, you know, the world, a benighted world is the U.S. intervene everywhere to solve the problems. And of course, it just brings the problems to the United States, and this aggravates the problems abroad. Again, the record of the United States in recent years is hardly encouraging, whether they're talking about Libya or Syria Serbia, the Balkans, or Ukraine. You know, you create war, you create opportunities for human trafficking, child sex trafficking, you know, and not to mention the various scandals involved in recently, you know, more recently with the Clinton Foundation in Haiti, and the questions arising out of that. And of course, I'm waiting to see a movie about, about the Franklin scandal, or, you know, or a movie about, a real movie about Jeffrey Epstein and what it really entailed, and intelligence. Why did Why was the U.S. Attorney Acosta told to back off on the Epstein investigation? Because he belonged to intelligence.
You know? Right. How about a movie about that? One that would have the list of individuals that, are supposedly it was, were in the woman's trial, mm-hmm. which never got released to public. I mean, you know, they're and with no details, right? I mean, I think they mentioned a couple people, but nevertheless, there were no details. It was like Biden's laptop. Mm-hmm. You get this idea that there's some salacious and powerful evidence that's about to come forward. Everyone is titillated because it's typically sexual, but then it just it goes nowhere. There's process. You just forget about it and you go on to the next scandal.
Yep. Hey, I guess this was a white pill, kind of. A federal judge ruled that the Biden administration officials are prohibited from contacting social media companies about moderating posts protected by the First Amendment. The Biden administration is trying to suggest that just suggesting isn't to these social media companies that they curate or control information on their platforms isn't censorship. So the FBI calls and suggests something to you, it's just a suggestion. It doesn't mean, but nevertheless, this judge Terry Doherty wrote in a 155 page memorandum ruling that he believes the plaintiffs are likely to prove that the federal government officials are targeting and suppressing millions of protected free speech postings by American citizens. Well, you know, with the Twitter file revelations, this isn't really in dispute at this point. In fact, the reaction to the ruling proves that, you know, that that is indeed the case, because everyone is concerned that if the Biden administration can't do this, and Biden administration is appealing the case. So Biden administration is arguing that they can censor people's, speech on the internet. That's why they're appealing the case. What's interesting is the New York Times is criticizing the ruling. You think New York Times would celebrate free speech, but they actually think they need to be controlled by the government. It was an interesting response.
Right, and I love the ruling because he actually gave the declarative sentence that the postings online are an area of free speech. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely think that is critical, and I was glad that a judge actually stood up and insisted that now the federal government go through process.
The Guardian even quoted Nina Jankowicz as an expert. Remember Nina Jankowicz? she didn't sing, but she did. She did say restricting the ability of the Biden administration to work with social media companies is countering online and conspiracy theories, is a weaponization of the court system. Because this is like an inversion here that could devastate the fight against misinformation ahead of the 2024 presidential election. Well, that's funny. I mean, wait a second. What's misinformation? I mean, the vaccine prevents infection. Is that misinformation?
It was claimed to be so at a certain point. But, you know, you can see that we are, this is why, you know, they talk about the clown world. It's the transition into raw, powerful propaganda that doesn't have any kind of connection into evidence or facts. They're just saying this is what it is, and don't ask us why. It's kind of what happened with the vaccine.
Well, isn't the way you know something's misinformation is you debate it?
Well, you would think so. Right. See, the point is, it cannot. And I just keep
I mean, it's like
this you're going to see more and more of this. And I think I've been proven right, is that this is the moment of diminishing returns. They do not have anything that they can debate about. All of the critical issues as they move forward from here on out, they cannot actually try to use, you know, what I would call the Socratic method to support their propaganda. It isn't going to be like that. It's just going to be like the transgender agenda. It's top-down intimidation. They have some kind of weird science that may be in back of it, but there's no discussion. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you want to discuss it, I mean, recently, some people are saying that if you don't use the proper pronouns, it's hate speech and you can be arrested.
I'm sorry, proper pronouns? Wouldn't that be like?
Well, I know, it's as they define
it. As they define it, okay.
So there it is. But so this is the thing. This is our world going forward. There is no more subtlety, folks. They just don't have any of that to offer. So it's just going to be absolute power propaganda, mind control, and if you resist, they'll try to destroy you. It's actually a very, very welcomed moment, in my opinion, because now, even though, you know, the majority, I would call them the vaccinated, to use an expression, are going to buy it and will just do what they're told. But this will really rub the skeptical the wrong way. And it's going to be hard for them to, you know, accept contradictions and control over their behavior as the result of contradiction. So it's going to create, you know, a reaction, a political reaction.
And well, what it really exposes is that to most Americans who read this case and then also the ruling and then see the reactions by the establishment media, the mainstream media, is one of the most misleading assumptions in American politics is that the establishment journalists, the fourth estate, is opposed to government power and favors free speech. It does not. Now, for the longest time, the government and these institutions could give lip service to the First Amendment free speech because they were the gatekeepers. And someone once said that for the longest time, the First Amendment was the right of 250 wealthy families to speak their opinion. And now it's down to like five or six, corporations. But nevertheless, free speech, if you were rich enough to own a newspaper, a radio station, or a network, you had free speech, and then they could give lip service to the First Amendment because, however, I can speak my opinion, but I had no ability to amplify it or project it or to promote it. But along with the internet in the 21st century, you had this rise of alternative media and outlets like YouTube, which was one time was a wild, wild west for free speech. The same with Twitter and all these platforms, even Facebook. And they lost control of the narrative because the gatekeepers were still around, but the walls had collapsed. And all of a sudden they couldn't control anything more. So now they can't even give lip service to free speech. So they come up with this idea of hate speech or misinformation and these things. And when they're the biggest purveyors of these things, like the ADL is really, they should drop the A because they're involved in defamation. The government's involved in misinformation and lying. They've been caught so many times in these things. And they do it from a position of authority and power. So it's even more consequential when they lie. So again, now we had a great leveler 20 years ago. And for maybe a decade, better part of a decade or a little more, there was free speech and they lost control of the narrative. And that's why you had this crackdown the past 6-7 years.
Yeah, the genie got out.
Yeah.
And it can't be put back in the bottle because it's now almost self-stimulating and it's getting larger and larger. And so they're going to have to move to more chemical controls than intellectual controls going forward. And so I think that's why you get the acceleration of the vaccines, the transgender promotion, and then on to transhumanism, where they will have a kind of, mechanical control over humans. If they can get people to actually take the genetic modifications they have in mind for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course, past week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the candidate for the Democratic nomination for the for the presidency, he came out and talked about Operation Mockingbird. Again, this isn't conspiracy theory. Those in the know of Mockingbird. It was a CIA's covert propaganda program designed, to manipulate the American media, and of course, by that we mean the American people, by manipulating public perception, controlling information. His disclosure wasn't exactly startling, but perhaps it is. I think it was on the Lex Fridman podcast. For those, normal people who don't really follow these things, it could be a revelation, but this was exposed in the 1970s during the church committee hearings. And of course, the extent of the program, I think as many as 400 journalists, editors were on the CIA payroll. They got newspapers to publish favorable news stories to gather information for them. This cut across the board with radio and also network news. Now, those who know the industry, the history of mass communication and media, particularly networks, know that it had a direct connection to the government's intelligence agencies in the middle part of the 20th century, particularly Office of War Information and Office of Strategic Services. And after the war, after the Second World War, they simply migrated over to these networks when they became broadly established, particularly in, with television, but with radio too. And of course, media control isn't anything new, going as far back as the Civil War, the so-called Civil War. President Lincoln shut down newspapers that weren't favorable or supportive of his efforts to combat the South's attempt at secession, had people arrested. We had yellow journalism in the early part of the 20th century that promoted this, or late 19th century and early part of the 20th century, which promoted the Spanish-American War. We all know, you know, Pulitzer,
Charles.
Well, no, you know, the guy who's Orson Welles movie's about. Name's film right now.
Oh, fuck. Sorry, I can't. It doesn't come to mind.
Yeah, well, yeah. But anyway, you know, the yellow journalism. And I think there was a Texas congressman who said that at the time, during the lead up to America's entry into the war, that a consortium of financial interests just around the J.P. Morgan ambit had gotten control of all the major newspapers to control the flow of information to support America's entry into the First World War. And of course, during the Second World War, the media was tightly controlled under the Office of War Information. So it wasn't anything new. Hearst. The Hearst Publishing Empire. So this is the idea of media control. Again, I said, you know, First Amendment was the right of 250 wealthy families to promote their opinions. The idea that publishing, whether it's newspapers or mass media, is always in control of wealthy people who are, by definition, to be connected to the state and to the financial that control the government. So this is something that it was almost inevitable, I think, in many purely free press is probably a pipe dream or a fantasy, given the nature of things and fallen human nature and how those in power are going to exploit their position to pursue their interests. And one of it is the control and flow of information, especially in a democracy where it has to be managed. There was Walter Lippmann who said the public opinion, of course, doesn't really exist, has to be manufactured. In fact, it's even more important in a democracy to manipulate and control public opinion than in an authoritarian regime, because the state, the regime's legitimacy rests on broadly on the public support. So it's even more important to manipulate the masses.
Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, this is, oh, that's great. It's like,
One of the things that the revelations from the Church Commission was that there were 2,000 novels.
Yeah.
Claimed to have influence over, and they weren't itemized, but there was obviously much more, many more, because
magazines, right? Magazines.
And I wrote an article, which anyone who's curious can look at, on Ken Kesey. Mm-hmm. And he would be an example, just real quick, you know, if you look at Cuckoo's Nest, you know, the lead character, it's an insane world, you know, he can't overcome the government. And at the end, the Indian escapes and goes back into the wild. And this, of course, the idea of the counterculture of mm-hmm. like hippies and communes and leaving, you know, normative, you know, European culture behind. That was obvious.
The archaic revival, I think.
Was the archaic revival, yeah. Just come to life. And then, of course, there's also a video of Kesey that claims to be his first LSD, or one of his LSD trips when he was working with MK Ultra. It's online, and it is just an absolute homage to Freemasonry, where he's sitting there talking about the all-seeing eye. I mean, it's just clearly ridiculous. It's an artificial creation. This recording he claims to have made never occurred. It's just his way of tip of the hat to the power of Freemasonry and to its control, I presume, inside, you know, his part in the destruction or the promotion of the counterculture. But anyway, so this is the thing, is that you can see how with very subtle adjustments, they can create novels which can fit into, you know, the psychological narrative that they're creating, so that if they're going to bring out the counterculture, you know, here it comes, you've got, you know, Ken Kesey, you know, you have the rock and roll singers, you know, dressed up like Indians and cowboy hats and things. So this is how they can manipulate. And so for Bobby Kennedy Jr. to talk about it is very, very useful. I mean, that, to me, this is just terrific. It's the kind of things that, as I pointed out, I don't really trust him, but if he is controlled opposition, he's certainly the best one we have. And just bringing up these issues help, you know, push the ball down the road in terms of the development of a really more energized, body of skeptics inside, you know, the United States.
Yeah, the idea that the CIA is manipulating the media. And of course, what we mean by CIA, we're not just talking about, you know, CIA proper, the alphabet soup agency, the bureaucracy. We're talking about what it really entails. That is publishing. It's like the Time Life Empire, Henry Luce and his connections to the CIA and OSS, that Skull and Bone just establishment. And of course, Hollywood. We've talked about, CIA was involved in promoting, you know, the black exploitation films of the 1970s. And 2000 novels, right? They're going to publish, and these authors are going to be paid to promote a certain worldview or certain values. And I mean, countless magazines, Ms. Magazine, probably National Review, probably all the major political publications of 20th century America.
Well, Gloria Steinem was just, she was an absolute 100% product of this process.
Yeah, she was recruited by the CIA. Yeah,
we wouldn't even know who she was if they hadn't actually manipulated her into Ms. Magazine.
And Ms. Magazine, all this corporate funding. It's like, this dissident magazine is corporate funding.
Yeah, and then she gets to say things like, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And this, you know, really helps, with the destruction of the family, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, so, didn't she say the CIA was like peace loving and liberal?
Yeah, that's right. Because what happened, she got caught. It's a long story, too long to go into, but she got caught and then she came out and said, I was an agent. I'm sorry, but the CIA is really very liberal. They're very cool people. They're very feminist.
Well, that was the Congress of Cultural Freedom. Probably it was a part of that, right? That was.
Of course, it was. It was one of her employers. When
there was Cord Meyer, right? Cord Meyer's operation.
Cord Meyer, yeah. And also the
Barney, they funded Frank, modern art, right?
Barney Frank, who I described as, I think, macabre but hideous, homosexual congressperson who became so famous before he was like a congressperson. He was a CIA agent trying to manipulate the culture of the countries that they would go into. And then,
who got involved in human trafficking?
Yep.
Yep, back in the 80s, that was exposed. His house was a call boy.
I mean, it's, once you start peeling back the layers, the whole thing is just a cesspool. And you don't really need to go too deep to really get the understanding that, the political class, they are not what they pretend to be. This, what they claim is propaganda. And, we need to just replace them en masse.
Well, what's interesting is how Kennedy's revelation, call it that, because most people in the know are aware of Operation Mockingbird, but the idea that it shed light on the broader issue of government influence over the media. And now we have today the Biden administration like appealing a ruling claiming it has the right to openly interfere in media, social media, if you will, in the flow of information, saying they have to fight misinformation. And in the old days in Operation Mockingbird, they had these guys were undercover, or it was done on the sly. They would try to pretend that CBS News and NBC, ABC weren't working with the intelligence agencies and the Pentagon. Now it's openly acknowledged that this is, we do this and we have to do it.
I don't know if I mentioned it before we started recording, but Kennedy's more a kind of an interesting revelation to me was his pointing out, when he's talking about the idea of an ethnic bioweapon, and he mentioned that the coronavirus could have been designed as such because certain ethnicities are not, don't accept it very easily. He was actually referring to a science paper that's called, people can read it, called ACE2 Coding Variants in Different Populations and Their Potential Impact on SARS-CoV-2 Binding Affinity. And it has a nice little graph of, the, I want, again, this is too complicated to go into right now, but you know, viruses, according to theory, attach to particular parts of human cells, and certain populations simply don't have this ACE2 variant in high levels. So there, it's a bell curve, but the Ashkenazi have almost no ACE2 variant, and then the next one would be like the Chinese, and of course, the ones who have the most, well, that's us, the Europeans. So Kennedy was pointing out that, well, this was an example of the possibility of how, you know, and kind of explain, well, this could have, this, you know, under some, you know, concept could be, have been, can be seen as a bioweapon. And that, I'm telling you, at this point, he has really crossed a line, because this is truly a concern and something that is possible. And so to bring out the fact that, you know, the science paper I'm referring to, it did a study and it said, you know, this is very strange, but there is this, you know, odd shift in human populations in terms of who would get it. And people should be aware of that. And I was happy to see RFK Jr. go into this, because just to bring up the concept, I mean, he was slammed immediately as, you know, anti-Semite conspiracy. Mm-hmm. They just went right after him. But he didn't really assert that it was a bioweapon. He was just giving it as an example of how one could be constructed. But this particular example is very, very important and useful for people to have in their minds. I hope people read the science paper. It's not too sciencey, and it'll give them a good understanding of, you know, what concerns we should have about this thing.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to make of these white papers and documents, whether they're thrown out there to misdirect us or just to raise paranoia. I remember it was... almost 20 years ago, they were talking about a bio-specific weapon or something. Cheney was, or something, and
yeah, it was in the Project for New American Century.
Yeah, so that, yeah, which again, which was dominated by Jews, and they're talking about a bio-specific weapon. Which, that's,
and they were talking about how this was this something you had to be afraid of. You know, it's science that I frankly don't have a good control over. I know that people are concerned about it. I do think that there are minuscule genetic differences between ethnicities, and that it's, if someone wanted to, it sure seems possible to me to set up a bioweapon based on ethnicity. I just think it's a useful thing for people to think about. So,
well, no, obviously certain groups metabolize differently. Good example with alcohol, Mesoamericans or don't metabolize it well, affects them worse. Obviously, you have sickle cell anemia, things like that. So it's not something that's sci-fi, and it definitely could be weaponized, you know, if one was so inclined or had the desire to do it. Again, it's just, you know, when you get some of these technical scientific questions, it's almost like you have to trust these folks.
Right, and you can't.
You can't.
One great thing about the COVID, thing is that the trust of science is at an all-time low. It's almost as low as journalism. Mm-hmm. And think of where it was, you know, like 40 years ago. I mean, if you got in there with, in front of the public with a white schmuck and horn-rimmed glasses and a chalkboard, it was like you were the Thomas Guide or something. It was just nothing but truth could come from you, you know. Mm-hmm. The public mesmerized. But now I would say basically the whole unvaccinated population has a high level of skepticism about science. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, deservedly so.
They just don't, you know, you may have some little science paper. I don't care. Let's just continue to do research before we agree to anything, you know.
Did you see the CDC issued guidance for trans people on chest feeding?
Yeah, I was very impressed with that. That is so sick. It is just complete insanity of chest feeding. You know, where they have chemicals that permit males to produce breast milk.
And they're encouraging newborns to ingest this?
And did you notice there was a very coherent response to it by physicians who said, you know, the problem here is that these chemicals that you're using are very toxic, and you really don't want newborns to be ingesting this stuff. They pointed out that there is just no way you can get to breastfeeding from a male without having these very powerful hormones and chemicals, you know, put into the man's body. And man, you don't want that stuff in a baby. So if this is, you know, anyone who does this, any male who goes forward with this process, You know, it isn't just mental illness. It's really a kind of violence against a child. You know, I mean, it's just.
Talk about ultimate narcissism.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, Center for Disease Control, this is one of these institutions that the public is supposed to trust in matters of public health. It's science. You're supposed to think that it's rational and it's clear. It's based on facts. But they're doing this, which is just, it's insane. And
they literally gave a how-to
position
paper on it without any moral concern whatsoever.
Are these men who have artificial breasts who then... able to produce some sort of liquid or something? I'm a little confused.
You know, I tell you the truth, my stomach turned and I just couldn't go any deeper into the subject, Tim. But all I know is that the same physicians who wrote responses to it all pointed out that the chemicals were very, very powerful and dangerous to children. I just think we can leave it at that.
I think there was Dr. Peter McCullough had a response. He said, I point out that male breast was not designed to generate copious amounts of colostrum in milk, of course. You need a doctor to tell you that. Trying to force it through hormones is likely to produce inadequate, low-quality, hormone-tainted liquid that would be potentially harmful to the baby who should be suckling on a normal mother's breast. Instead of fantasizing about being a woman, men can focus on helping the mother who just delivered with a work around the house, cooking, supervising other kids in the home, and keeping their appointments for psychotherapy. Just as soon as, I mean, that's...
touche. Really, that's very clear-minded. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Again, there we have Jen Psaki. Remember Jen Psaki?
Sure.
She was on a program...
Raptor-looking... press spokesperson for I forget which president, but she was just miserable.
Joe Biden. Psaki was on I guess it was a program called News Not Noise, and I watched it, and I think it was acting, but she started to break down while discussing harsh and cruel anti-LGBTQ legislation. She said, "This is a political wedge issue in an attempt to win a culture war." Who started the culture war, Jen? Psaki said as she began audibly weeping, and they're doing it in a way that is harsh and cruel to a community of kids. "I'm going to get emotional about this issue because it's horrible," she continued, "but it's like the kids who are bullied, and all these leaders are out there taking steps to hurt them and hurt their lives and hurt their families. And you look at some of these laws in these states, and it's going to keep parents or in loving relationships who have kids. It's completely outrageous. Sorry, this is an issue that makes me completely crazy," evidently. Then she started to cry. Of course, what she's saying, she's upset that there are laws being passed in dozens of states that are prohibiting or restricting the ability to ghouls posing as doctors to mutilate or poison kids because their parents have decided, so in some cases, school councils have decided that these kids need to transition to the opposite sex from what they are. Of course, she's saying that it's a horrible situation if children aren't being mutilated or poisoned. So this is sort of this satanic inversion we're seeing here.
Yeah, it is satanic inversion. There's, an obvious response to Jen and her tears. There's actually now been a couple science, papers. I mean, we just looked at, covered one very briefly, but, on adolescents and young adults who are showing signs of rapid onset of gender dysphoria. Okay, that's the transgender concept that rapidly onsets. And so a bunch of science papers have come out. And I just wanted to mention that the one that I'm referring to, which is the lead scientist, was Littman, Littman, if people want to go on PubMed and read it. And she pointed out, or he, I'm not sure who it was, a male or female, but pointed out that, two-thirds of the individuals who have had this sudden onset have already been diagnosed with at least one mental health disorder or neuro development disability prior to the onset of their of this gender dysphoria. Now that's important. I'll explain this in a second. But they also point out that the that it looks like the thing which really moves them is not some kind of innate spiritual nature of the individual which wants to change sexes. Because you see, this is the key issue, even though it's never discussed, but it's really what's important, is that they're claiming that these individuals are sort of just, they were a woman born in a man's body. And so we have to fix that. And when they express their real self, they are linked to this true soul that was mistakenly given by God or genetics, which got the, somehow got the gender mixed up. And so now we have to fix it. And that people who try to stop this process are like, make Jen cry. But you have to remember that when you look at these science papers, that they point out that, first of all, after the fact, after they go through this, gender process, that like 90% of them had basically mental illness that's identifiable, according to these parent studies, that occurs after the fact. They had declines in mental health and in parent-child relationships. I mean, all of these things you would anticipate from the, you know, particularly if they're taking hormone, therapy. And so you have to weigh these facts with the fact, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, that over like 35% of these people who are doing the transition are autistic, right? They're autistic. They are young autistic children. How can someone who is mentally challenged like that make, you know, reach into his mind and come up with this concept that, well, you know, I was just misgendered by God? Obviously, there is social pressure on the person. And this is what these papers, they actually point out the obvious. There's no way that you can get around any kind of objective analysis of the situation will reveal that, this is something that is being brought about. It isn't this innate soul that was misgendered by God. It's actually just the power of propaganda getting at children who are not clear-minded, who are not in a position of where they have any kind of agency. I mean, one cluster of this is movie stars who have now adopted children, and then, you know, a large cluster of them will like change the gender of the child.
Yeah, why do you have more of it in New York and LA than you do in Ohio?
Right, and then that's publicly promoted, yeah, because they're trying, you know, this is just a way of getting the public to accept this as just a normal way of living, you know. But I mean, the fact is, it's obviously just being brought about by social control and propaganda to children who are, they are toxified, in many cases they are mentally challenged, and they are just not capable of making a decision. And so, I mean, Jen can cry all she wants. Why doesn't she bring up any of these facts? It'd really be great to have an actual discussion rather than tears and the kind of propaganda and intimidation. Don't stand up against this because you're an evil person. Why doesn't Jen, who purports to be like an intelligent person capable of debate and discussion in a forum, why doesn't she have one of those if she's so certain about her position? Why does she have to use these obvious propaganda techniques? Well, Tim, it's just diminishing returns. She can't. She's another one of the of our cultural shapers that is just incapable of any kind of discussion about the issue she's promoting. She knows she would just be destroyed. So it's up to the the skeptics in our culture to point this out and to try to give better information to parents than Jen's doing.
Well, this you're dealing with a generation or a couple of generations that are suffering more neurological damage than any previous because of the increased vaccine schedule, perhaps. So you have higher rates of autism, or people who are further along the spectrum because of that, because of greater neurological damage, coupled with the sort of the toxic culture in society, the 24/7, 365 promotion of this stuff by the media, by the oligarchs, you know, by the education establishment, and by the medical establishment, by government, and all the social cues that promote this. Of course, the toxic environment, the promotion of perversion and sexual morality by the establishment, and the effects it had on family in the past 50, 60 years. So people are coming into this already damaged, and so they're easily manipulated. And so you have what's called a social contagion. This is was indicated. There was a poll at Brown University where nearly 40% of the students identify as LGBTQ. Now, obviously, they're just following social cues. It's peer pressure. It's what you do now. If you're a college student, perhaps, and you get some sort of identity or status out of being a sexual minority. One thing that's interesting is that they find that although students identify as such, their behavior doesn't comport to their supposed identification, meaning they're just saying they are, meaning very few of the people who say they are acting out on this identity sexually. So it's a social cue. And this is an indication how you can get people to abandon, you know, preconceptions or values just because you can reward people for having the right identity or saying the right thing. But you see these in colleges, universities, and schools, even high schools now, and further in the lower grades as these things are promoted. And again, you would expect to see this. This is the power of propaganda, the power of promotion, the power of manipulation that you see in advertising, government propaganda. And I mean, it's like no surprise that if you promote it, people will start to respond to it. And
yeah, exactly. And the poll that was done at Brown was an example of the propaganda. They had just created a whole bunch of criteria that people could check the box, and then they produce it, in the graph saying, look, we're letting, and again, the people who were in back of this were claiming that this was the release of the soul of the individual that God had misgendered.
Well, that's very science. That's a lot of that's
right, science. Exactly. Yeah, very scientific. So
the spirit. I'm too spirited.
Yeah, too spirited. But if you look at actually how they did it, they created criteria like, the criteria were like questioning, asexual, pansexual, queer, other, bisexual, homosexual, and then good old-fashioned heterosexual. So this was the criteria, and then the real winner is questioning, and this was lumped into this, you know, the new, you know, how what they did was they partitioned it, saying that 38% are not claiming to be heterosexual. And so the big winner was questioning, which I don't know, got like 5% of the vote, even though what the heck does it mean? And then you also have the idea of like, well, asexual, is this, what is that? Pansexual, well, that could be. Well,
yeah, but why would you group asexual with that other cohort?
Of course, I mean, the thing is just ridiculous. And then they have other. Yeah. Well, what is other? I mean, other what? They also have bisexual, which was had a huge number of people. What is bisexual partly heterosexual? So if you actually partition it, you can see that what they did was they just created a number to use as a promotion of the LGBTQA, this long, anyway, so it's just ludicrous, and it's just
but what this goes to is what I alluded to earlier was you have this Jim Caviezel movie, The Sound of Freedom, that focuses on child sex trafficking, which is indeed horrible, but that's very narrow. But as I said earlier, is that this, it doesn't address the wider issue of the damage that the promotion of sexual perversion, sexual immorality has on society in general. And you're seeing the effect here where you have these young people who evidently probably got on to this when they were adolescents or children, 10, 15 years ago, how their sexual values are being corrupted early on, and once
and you sexuality. And there's another when you look at pansexual or
well, that's no morality. That's just degeneracy. Right. That's just parasexuality. The idea is they're unmoored from any truth or morality in these affairs. So yes, they will be questioning, and they're not going to come out since they don't understand that there's a the logos, a meaning to sex. That they're not going to dismiss things like homosexuality or whatever perversion is suggested to them, because it's all just a matter of having fun or feeling or pleasure. And so, which is ultimately the objective of homosexuality, is that's the attitude, is because there's no purpose to it other than one's sexual pleasure. And so what we're seeing here is sort of the culmination or the bitter fruit of promoting this attitude over multiple generations. Again, when you promote this sort of sexual immorality in mass and society, you're going to produce a generation like this, which isn't going to be able to produce or form families or form cohesive, you know, meaningful communities. And you result in sort of an atomized society. It's libido dominandi, as D. Michael Jones has articulated well. He said that sexual liberation is a means of political control that's merely trafficked or sold to the public is liberation, but basically it's the what you're doing is you are sacrificing your rational faculties for your passions, which are easily manipulated by those in power. As you can see in these polls, those you can promote the, you know, you can create a media campaign to promote the passions and desires over your rational faculties, and you become a slave to your passions. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, you well said. I mean, what you're looking at with the Brown poll is the effects of pornography, which has reduced and destroyed the what you refer to as the logos of sex, which yes. The idea that it's overall.
You drown society in pornography. You produce people like this.
Exactly,
and they know it. So I mean, I'm shocked.
Yeah, go back to the Hungarian Soviet. We talked about this a million times.
They've been grooming children for 60 years, openly grooming children since the late
1960s. Over 100. Yeah. So they
but in the past there were law. There were like decency laws that you could at least appeal to, and you can't even do that. You know.
Yeah. Just think of how many hours the people who took this poll have in their lives watched pornography. I mean, I'll bet you like the 1,000 hours. And so when they approach a relationship, well, what do you think they're looking for?
It taints, it completely distorts their view of sexuality and their experience. And not to mention how many have been, abused, many are molested in many ways themselves. What's that actress who was in Ellen, what's her name? Ellen Page.
Yeah.
Now Elliot Page claims she transitioned. And of course, she's been totally mutilated. She was a small, little, petite, cute girl, and she was mutilated by doctors in Hollywood. And apparently, that she had an interview. She talked about why she did it. And apparently, it was ironically a movie I think called Hard Candy, exposing, or a movie about a pedophile, where she was serially raped, or she was subjected to multiple, casting couch sexual encounters to get that role when she was a young teenager. And this psychologically scarred her. Obviously, it's going to taint her view of sexuality, her own sexuality, her relation to the opposite sex. It's going to sour it in many ways and scar her psychologically. And when she went to go see apparently the psychologist about this, and she talked about this experience, instead of talking about the experience where she was sexually abused and manipulated by Hollywood, which they immediately gave her drugs and said she should transition to the opposite sex. Now, what type of, what type of help is that?
I don't know if Medicare.
If a girl, I'm a lay person, and a girl came to me that she was asexual or she felt this way. She expressed these feelings. She told me that she'd been raped several times. Yeah, that's why, and it's understandable. And let's deal with that trauma and try to heal that instead of mutilate the person. But instead, those ghouls mutilated her so she could be a trophy or some sort of example.
Yeah, she's a trophy. It's transgenderism. Really, because you have to really wonder. I'd like to see exactly who the people were who violated her, and then who the people were who medically violated her, and see what kind of relationship they have and what group they represent. Because this was just raw evil.
Something tells me that they belong to the same tribe.
I would have to suspect it. I mean, I don't know. I've never looked into this, but this is as you said, well said, that when you lose the, and I think it's a good use of the term, the logos of sex, which it has it structured inside of a marriage, structured inside of a community, then you isolate it, and in doing so, you end up without the basically the capacity to form a family. Because it one thing that the Brown poll shows, if you look at the people who are the questioning, the asexual, the queer, whatever that means, because it's different than homosexual, I have no idea what it means, but I will bet you that 50 years from now, this entire group will have produced no children, mm-hmm. and will have no family production. I mean, there may be some relationships that have been, sanctioned by law, but there will not be families coming out of it. So the one silver lining out of all this is that the current attempt to, to go from, from transgender to transhumanism, which is what I think is occurring here, will have the effect of not letting this, to use an expression, woke individuals produce children. I mean, believe me, there will be no families and no kids coming from this. And they can put all of the hormones into the chests of males they want. You're not going to have any children being produced by this group. One maybe in a million or something. But so in other words, this is a kind of sterilization. This is how irrational these philosophies are, is that they literally are a sterilization of your biology. So they are completely in opposition to just the biology that these individuals have as humans, as they came into the world. And so, they have fallen under the spell of evil, and fortunately, and it's tragic, but this is kind of the same situation that you have with the vaccinated. If you're not skeptical in this world, if you just follow orders, you're going to be part of the power of the political class that is genociding, European culture. So you can't waste time with these individuals. It's just, God bless them in any way you want, but you have to move away from them. And so at Brown, there is a collection of heterosexuals who somehow have resisted all of the pornography and of the propaganda that hopefully inside of that group, though I doubt it actually, it's Ivy League, but in general, in the American population in general, if they put out a list like this, it wouldn't look anything like Brown's, but it would have, there would be a fairly large fraction of people who would be questioning, because there's the effects of pornography have been so widespread. But nevertheless, it's actually, there's a useful bifurcation occurring. And at the end of it, the people who resist this, they are the ones that should be having kids. They are the ones who actually can have kind of a logos type relationship with a woman or a man, So I'm not, I look at these things and it's just, it's a body blow, because it's so sad to think about these people. But, going forward, there is a path. The people who can produce children can see the effects of the pornographic culture, and they can find ways to create some political power to raise their kids differently.
You sent me this article, the Upper West Side cult that hid in plain sight. Sullivan Indians, right? Sullivan Indians. It's hard to pronounce that. Sullivan, right. I guess. And I guess you said you alluded, or at least you suggested, this is the authoritarian personality at play here.
Yes, I mean, that article is. I don't have it in front of me, but you could read the title of it. It describes a group that really wanted to find an alternative to family, and then it describes what happens to these individuals, and then looking backwards of the tragedy of what they did. It was a Jewish guy who came up with this concept. And it's just been the reason I said
a Jewish guy come up with a concept to undermine the family.
Yeah, oddly enough, amazing. And who would have thought that? And anyway, the point is that what's kind of interesting about the article, the reason I sent it to you, is just that it's kind of looking, you know, in hindsight. So this is what you get with the authoritarian personality. You get these broken, shattered lives where, you know, where all of the free sex and everything, what does it lead to eventually? You know, it leads to suicide and isolation, you know? So, you know, sex has to be part of relationships. Otherwise, it just, this is where it heads, leads to.
Yeah, we're seeing that just with the Brown poll. And the article reads this, the Sullivan Indians, Bet Noir, was the nuclear family, which they identified as the wellspring of all human pathology. To shake off the bourgeois norms, Sullivan Indian parents lived with the same-sex roommates and cultivated close platonic friendships, replete with tween-style sleepovers. They had lots of heterosexual partners. In fact, turning down most any sexual proposition from any group member was frowned upon, but they were not allowed to form steady romantic relationships. Of course, this is the authoritarian personality right here.
Right, exactly.
Explain, sexual jealousy was a byproduct of capitalist mentality that saw marriage and monogamy as a form of ownership. Higher-ups prodded Sullivanians to renounce their parents and other blood relatives. One member ceased contact with her 12-year-old sister because the girl stopped going to therapy. Well, thank God. Women had to seek permission to get pregnant. I like that. How liberal. Yeah. While trying to conceive, they would have sex with multiple men in order to create ambiguity about their child's biological father. So sexual liberation is control. This is just right out of the handbook here. Of course, what we see here with that type of model, we saw that applied with Blacks in the 1960s. And what did that do? This is just another, here it says, as the many places mistaken for heaven, the guy at the top mistook himself for God. Saul Newton's bulldozing megalomania helped to secure the Sullivan Institute's initial success and also ensured its collapse. By the 1980s, Newton and his top therapists had demonic control over the parents' sex lives, social lives, and how they earned or spent money. Much of their income was swallowed up in the dues, fines, and assessments owed to the Institute, and how they were raised or usually didn't raise their children. This idyllic commune was overrun by snakes and pestilence, financial exploitation, physical and sexual abuse, child neglect, and mushrooming paranoia. So it's very much like a Black ghetto.
Yeah, it's like Jonestown meets the authoritarian personality.
Yeah. But all this is like, then they cite this lady, the radical feminist, Shulamith Firestone, who wrote The Dialectic of Sex in 1970. But this is just one of many, subversive Jewish cells that exist.
Cells. I mean, think of Marcuse and Eros and Civilization.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one thing I love, that the psychologist Bruno Bettelheim, an Austrian-born survivor of Dachau and Buchenwald, okay, compared mothers of autistic children to Nazi prison guards.
There you go.
It's always the Nazis.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is just... I just have to roll my eyes at this stuff. And this is, it's another thing. There are all these cabals or cells that undermine stuff. I was reminded that in 1973, the American Psychological Association declassified homosexuality as a psychological disorder. This wasn't a result of some scientific finding. It was a result of political agitation, largely from a group of Jews within the APA. This was led by Charles Silverstein. He wrote the book called The Joy of Gay Sex or something. Yeah. And basically he advocated this stuff. Of course, then he himself was a homosexual. So why would you rely on homosexuals to say it should be, a scientific approach wouldn't be to say, have a homosexual say it should be, declassified as a psychological disorder, in the diagnostic statistical model. It was a political move. But again, it's same thing with abortion. Bernard Nathanson writes about how him and I think it was Lawrence Later, it was the Jews in New York and California, which successfully imposed the Jewish vision of abortion on the rest of the country, his activism. And again, we have this, and again, we learn with something like with homosexuality, normalizing abnormal behavior, a society does that, it doesn't make that behavior normal, it makes society abnormal. And they found out even with homosexuals, as it became more accepted and more normalized, if you will, all the pathologies and problems that are common in homosexuals didn't go away. They got worse. So it wasn't because society wasn't accepting these people, that they were weren't healthy, or they were, you know, the somewhat higher rates of depression and suicide, because they were living abnormal, immoral lives, not consistent with logos, you know. And so trying to shove this down everyone's throat, if you will, isn't going to make it healthy or normal. It's just going to make society more abnormal, more unhealthy, which again is the ultimate objective with the authoritarian personality.
Right. And notice that these things are always inserted with power and dramatic intimidation against anyone who would stand in opposition to these concepts, and never tested with any kind of incrementalism. Because if they, you know, said, well, let us look at transgender as a scientific concept and do a transition in a small sample size and see what the results are, let's do that before we take it out as part of our accepted culture. Mm-hmm. See, if they did that, then they would never, ever get any of these things into the public domain, because people would find out that, wait a second, half of the people, you know, have these terrible results and the other half are miserable. So, you know, so they can't do it that way. They have to do it with the intimidation and the media control. And this is a tell for all of us that in back of it is in fact evil. This isn't a group of, you know, people who are just like Jen crying about, you know, people trying to prevent, hormone therapy for 10-year-olds. I mean, this is just intimidation and the power of mind control. And to stand up to these people and say, you know, we demand that there be some kind of scientific process before you take this into our culture, it could never stand scrutiny. And that's why she will never have any kind of discussion about it, because that this will come up as an issue. And so, you know, we're in a world of intimidation and the power of intimidation, and they claim that there's some kind of science, but that's only a claim for intimidation. They never want to open it up to a scientific method.
No, they're the science, and they right. Actually, as Dr. Fauci claimed, he actually embodied science. If you criticize him, criticizing science, you know. So, well, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, thank you so much, and we'll get him next week, brother.
Good night. Take it easy.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.